Good morning, KRFY listeners. Welcome to the Tuesday Morning Show with hosts Phil Huff. Good morning, Phil.
Morning, Julie.
And myself, Julie Calamine. Today, our guests will be Aaron Mader from the Lakes Commission. Good morning, Aaron.
Good morning.
Well, happy to have you. And Molly McCann from also the Lakes Commission and Bonner County Soil and Water. Good morning, Molly.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
Lucky to have you both here today. We'll start with a quote. It has to do with our topic today. All water has a perfect memory and is forever trying to get back to where it was. Toni Morrison. Today's weather, we can expect partly sunny skies with a high of 52. Tonight will be mostly cloudy with a low of 35. And tomorrow, Wednesday, we can expect partly sunny with a high of 64. Sounds like nice weather coming. Phil, what's new with you? What have you been seeing and hearing out there?
Well, it's springtime for sure. The birds were out chirping about 5 a.m. and lovely rains yesterday to help water the lettuce and spinach seeds over the weekend.
It must not have hailed on your house then. It did over at my house.
Nope.
Oh, nice, good for you.
Nice soft rain. But springtime around here means we watch the lake levels change. And today we have a couple folks in the room who are going to talk to us about the lake levels. But before we get to that, there's some other big picture questions. What we call the Lakes Commission really has a much longer name, doesn't it?
It does have a long name. I don't expect anybody else to remember it ever. But the full name, the legislatively granted name, is the Lake Pendre, Pendre River, Priest Lake, and Priest River Commission. But I try to avoid using that as much as possible because I've lost people before I even get to the end of our title.
Tell us a little bit about the commission and how it got started, what its big picture is. What does it do?
Well, the Lakes Commission was created by the legislature in 2003, and its focus is to, well, I'll just list out the duties that the commission was granted, which are to study and investigate ways to protect the water quality and quantity in the Pendre Priest Basin in the interest of native fisheries and the economy of the communities around the area.
This is a governor-appointed position by the governor of Idaho?
Yes, the governor appoints five local members, and we have two members that work, one for DEQ and one for U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
And so the commissioners locally represent various interests. Do you want to talk about some of the commissioners or their interests and what they represent?
Sure, I can list out the commissioners, and all of our commissioners and the local commissioners have been on the board since its creation, so they know a lot about the topics. So my five commissioners are, my chairman is Ford Elsesser, and he is a lawyer, and he has great knowledge about the issues that we cover. And we have Linda Mitchell is my vice chair, and she runs the Shawnee's cruise boat on Pendre, so she has significant interest in the health of our waters, and she's interested in the amount of water in the lake level on the lake. And we have Mark Brinkmeyer, and he is one of the owners of the Idaho Forest Group, and he is a business interest, and he is interested in the environment in general and taking his part in protecting it. We have Brent Baker, and he is a contractor in this area, so he represents the building community. And also Craig Hill, and Craig Hill owns Hills Resort on Priest Lake, so he kind of supports our Priest side, and he has the insider knowledge to that area.
So water in our area really impacts our economy, our lifestyle, our culture, our recreation. We'll get into a lot of the different things you do, but let's talk about what's on everybody's mind. What's happening with the lake level right now?
So the commission, I talk regularly with the Army Corps, and Army Corps manages Albany Falls Dam. And Albany Falls Dam is mostly in control of the lake levels on Pendre. And those lake levels start to come up around this time of year. On April 1st, they started to rise. It's a pretty slow rise in the beginning here. And from the winter lake level, kind of a confusing topic. I might come back to that in a minute. But this year, we were at about an elevation of 2,052 feet above sea level for the lake at our winter level when it started to rise. And it'll come up about 3 feet to 4 feet by the end of this month. So that would put it at around 2,055 feet. That's how we speak about lake levels. It's not proper I guess, way to say a number. But and then and during the month of May, it should come up to around 2060, so come up another 4 to 5 feet. And then they hope to have it at the summer level that we're all used to by early to mid-June, so maybe June 15th or June 10th, and that's 2062 feet above sea level. And they... none of that is concrete. I mean, rains can affect it. If there was a sudden melt that really changed the way water was flowing into the system, if it got really hot, that could change it. So none of it's solid, but this is what their goals are at this point in time.
So the summer tourists come, the lake's full up, they're at City Beach, and they swim and they leave, and they probably have no idea over the winter that it drops and exposes all the loose change they fell out of their swimming trunks in the water.
I think that's very true. I hear from people every year that had no idea that the lake level would change, and it drops 11 and a half feet about, so it is pretty significant.
So tell us some of the reasons why the lake level fluctuates like that.
Well, if you think back before there is any dams operating on the system, that would be somewhat of our normal operation. You would have a high when the snows melted off of the mountains, and so the water level would come up, and it would come up actually somewhat. This 2062 is about the average of where it would come up to, and so much above that you're starting to flood into Sandpoint and the area around it, and then the water levels would start to drop. So as the snow melted off, they would drop usually around mid-July. We would drop back down to our winter operation around 2051, where we go in the winter. It might even have dropped a couple feet more, but beyond that, water just wouldn't flow out of Ponderay. It would stop at the river at around Dover, and there wouldn't be much flow out. So then it would stay down, except for flood events. Maybe rain on snow events would raise it a couple feet here and there until spring, when it would melt off again. So when the dams were put in place, part of the goals and the objective of the dams, so the major thing would be flood control, and then power production's big on Albany Falls. But also, for Albany Falls especially, there's a big recreation element in keeping the lake level up for people to use the lake and for our economy to prosper from that capability.
So the level of the lakes fluctuated to control for floods and recreational use and downstream agriculture?
Well, the little bits of the nuances of the timings are kind of where you see some... The lake level is held up in the summer for recreation. It's dropped. It begins to drop in the end of September, and it has to be down by mid-November, and that is for kokanee spawning, because kokanee are laying their eggs around the lake at that time of year, and if you drop the lake level after they spawned, you would expose their nests, and we don't want to do that. So they have to drop it before they start spawning, which is usually around mid-November. And then it has to stay down for a little while until they complete spawning. And now there's a new agreement, somewhat new, with Army Corps and BP, Bonneville Power Administration, who markets the power off of the dam, to allow the lake to fluctuate up and down about 5 feet during the winter time to increase the power production capabilities. And that should leave Kokanee Reds safe, because Kokanee are no longer spawning when they begin that fluctuation. And then they stop that around the end of March.
So what role does the Lakes Commission play in that process?
Mainly we're a communication tool. I have a good relationship with the Army Corps and good communication. So if we see something mounting that could be a request for waters and that could disturb what we're comfortable with the operation, or we see an area where maybe we could get a little bit longer of a recreational season, we can communicate with the Corps and set up public meetings and try to make those sentiments clear. And that's about our role. And I also am out there to educate the community and teach people about how lake levels work.
Mm-hmm. So that's a great way to maybe move into some of the other work that the Lakes Commission does that you do along with the commissioners. And tell us about your other programs as a big picture.
In water quality and quantity are really broad. I just kind of covered the quantity aspect of things. So water quality could be so many things, and I try to keep my eyes open to topics that aren't being covered as much and by nonprofits or agencies. And we also help out quite a bit with other projects that are going on. One of the major things that the commission's been involved in is aquatic invasive species in the area, and we put a lot of time and effort into trying to support programs that are stopping these things from spreading and also to control what is already here. And so that's a major thing that we work on.
Sure. What are some of the big threats? What are some of those invaders?
Well, each water body has different invaders. So Priest Lake, because it's isolated kind of from our system, I mean, it feeds into the Pend'Oreille River, but it's not receiving things from the Pend'Oreille, has less invasives than Pend'Oreille. But it also has one that Pend'Oreille doesn't have, which is interesting. And but on both lake systems, we have Eurasian milfoil, which most people have heard of, and we have curly leaf pondweed. Priest Lake is controlled to try to stop these invaders and get rid of them, eradicate them completely. Whereas Pend'Oreille, they're coming from upstream and they're so plentiful that it's more managed to just keep recreation uses open. On Priest Lake, there's also a invader called a Chinese mystery snail. And I love to talk about this topic because this pretty much always comes from an aquarium dump. Somebody who spilled out their aquarium into a water body thinking that they were going to help their critters have a further life. But what it ends up doing is often those critters survive and they invade a system. And in some water bodies, they can wreak havoc. Eurasian milfoil probably came originally from an aquarium dump somewhere. It was highly used in aquariums. And another invader that we have on Pend'Oreille that we don't have on Priest is called flowering rush. It's a newer one coming down from Flathead Lake. And flowering rush is a major threat. We're starting to really see the damage that it can do to an ecosystem and to our recreation. And flowering rush probably came originally from somebody who let loose their water garden because it's an ornamental plant, very pretty flower on it, and it was probably released by somebody who was letting their plants go free.
And just what damage does it do to our lakes?
Well, flowering rush specifically is, it kind of looks like a rush. It's not a true rush, but it grows up like a cattail, which everybody can visualize. And it can live totally submerged underwater. It can come up out of the water a little bit. Or we've even seen plants that are growing almost completely out of the water in the riparian area around the water body. And flowering rush fills in bays, usually about 20 feet deep. It can fill in, and it fills in thicker than any other plant we've ever seen. It will outcompete cattails. It can compete with anything. And it has a very thick rhizome. And that rhizome breaks up, and it's just as hardy as can be. It doesn't mind being frozen. It likes it. Once the lake level comes down and it freezes, it frost heaves the little rhizomes and breaks them up so they can spread more effectively. Ducks love it, but they end up spreading the rhizome as well. And then when the water level comes back up, it takes a float and it goes down the system and falls out of the water and fills it in. It grows so densely you can't really recreate in it. It creates great habitat for a predatory fish and invasive fish like northern pike that we don't want, that eat native bull trout and cutthroat trout. And it also harbors snails. They love the way that it's shaped. And snails can carry swimmer's itch, which is a infection that people can get and makes you quite uncomfortable for a few days. You're itchy.
Has anyone had that other than me? Because I've had a long childhood of swimmer's itch, and I can tell you do not want to get swimmer's itch.
None of you.
Yes, my daughter had it last year.
Oh, not fun.
So this is personal.
Exactly.
It sounds so innocuous, flowering rush, but yet the way you describe it, it sounds like a pretty nasty invader. What's being done about it?
Well, flowering rush has been studied quite a bit, and we haven't, up until this point, found a lot that can affect it. We dig it, which I'll talk a little bit more further. So you can dig it up when you have very isolated plants and that aren't very well established and have some effect, but it's hard work. You can put a barrier over it, which you have to get a permit to do from Idaho Department of Lands, but that it will still live under a barrier for 2 to 3 years. So at least it keeps it from spreading, but it's not really useful because you can't leave a barrier down that long in killing it, but it can stop the spread a little bit. And now there's been no chemicals in the water that have been proven effective at really controlling flowering rush. So locally, our weed guy for the county, for Bonner County, Brad Bloomer, has developed with some other extremely practiced folks, a tool that is showing success where you apply an herbicide on the dry ground. So that would be when the lake level comes down, if the plants are exposed, they can treat it with an herbicide. But it's just in the spring season when it's starting to rain and the plants are starting to pop out of the ground. And so it's a very limited time frame. It's quite successful, but it's not probably a tool that could work for everybody all the time. And it takes upkeep. It's not going to kill the plants forever. They're going to keep reinvading. So this is a plant that you just have to be on all the time.
There's been some success with hand pulling too, right?
Yes, we, the commission and the city of Sandpoint have worked together to have flowering rush digs at City Beach for about 5 years now. We do it 2 times a year and we get out volunteers. We take anybody. We love support. And you just go out and you dig it up for a couple of hours and we usually get all the plants we can find in that area. And it has proven effectiveness. Even some of the more established plants that were there, finally last year we saw them not grow back. We marked them so we know where they were at. And so it is proving effective, but this is diligent work every 2 times a year, and it will never stop. We need to do this.
There's an opportunity coming up to help hand pull some flowering rush, isn't there?
Yes, you can come join in the fun on April 16th, which is a Saturday at 10 a.m. We'll meet at the City Beach Pavilion. This also cooperates with the Lake Ponderay Waterkeepers cleanup. So they have a cleanup where they pick up trash in that area, and we support that effort as well. And so you come out with either intention, and it's great.
And so that's Saturday, April 16th?
Yep.
Do folks have to sign up first or just show up?
You can just show up. If you come to dig, you should bring some boots and gloves and a trowel if you have one. It's pretty muddy work and somewhat hard for the little kids. So it's better maybe for a little bit older group.
So if you're just tuning in this morning, this is 88.5 KRFY's The Morning Show with Phil Huff and Julie Calamine. Today we have in the studio guests Aaron Mader and Molly McCann with the Lakes Commission and the Bonner County Soil Conservation District. We're talking about all things water-related. So, Molly, tell us about some of the other invasive species that you and Aaron are working on.
Well, one of the biggest threats we have are quagga zebra mussels, which is why the Idaho State Department of Agriculture has started the boat inspection program. And our conservation district, Bonner Soil and Water, manages 3 of those boat inspection stations for our county. One is located in Samuels, one in Clark Fork, and one at Albany Falls Visitor Center. And this year, the state has provided much more funding in order to make that program more effective and efficient. And so it appears as if those stations will now be open from dawn till dusk. So from 5:30, I believe, until 9, in order to reach the early morning fishermen and the early travelers coming through, and then the light night travelers. So that's one of the main, that's an excellent program for targeting all our invasive species, really. The inspectors do a thorough inspection of everybody's boat and trailer. They're trained in finding quagga zebra mussels that attach to hard surfaces.
And Molly, is it for all boats? Is it kayaks and wake paddleboards, things like that, too?
It is anything that might have water in it and might have had contact with a quagga zebra mussel or a veliger, which are the little babies. Okay. So the main message is to clean, drain, dry your boat because veligers and mussels live in water for up to, or they live out of water for up to 30 days. So if you can get the boat, anything in the boat, completely dry, you're likely to kill them.
So the inspection stations found a lot of quagga mussels trying to get in?
Well, yes, this year we've already had two fouled boats in Idaho. How many boats do we have?
There's been about 100 boats that have come from infested waters in California. So they just left the water, and they could be carrying mussels even in their baby, the villager stage, in their bilge water. And so it's important that we're catching these boats, the infestations coming up northward through California, and there's boats traveling constantly right now, even this early in the year.
Yeah, so two fouled boats on Highway 93. And I just want to point out that we do not have any quagga zebra mussels in Idaho to date. It's all our surrounding states, so we got to hold the line here.
And can you tell us what is dangerous about having zebra mussels or quagga mussels in the lakes?
Well, yes. They, like I said, they attach to all hard surfaces, so shorelines, rocks, docks, hydro systems, and they reproduce like mad, so they just they accumulate in abundance, and they're very difficult to remove. So I think the cost to these states who have seen them in their water bodies are in the, you know, millions and millions.
Hundreds of millions.
Annually, too. They have to scrape them off and section them, and they eat the phytoplankton. They filter the phytoplankton in our waters, and deprive the zooplankton of food. And so basically they just make water bodies sterile and unproductive.
Yes, it's my understanding that the lakes get clearer, but they're less productive.
Exactly.
Yes.
Which is, yeah. When we think of clean, clear water, that actually doesn't actually mean good water quality. So,
that in mind. Yeah.
Good point.
What are some of the other threats? I know you wanted to talk a little bit about the rock snot.
Yuck!
I hate that.
So this is more of a point of interest, I suppose, because it occurs in our system. And rock snot, its real name is Didymo. And it was suspected to be an invasive diatom, so it's a single-celled organism. But now they believe that it is actually a native, that with our changing conditions, the way we've altered our water systems or the climate or whatever has changed, it's changed the way that this diatom is behaving. And so it's become much more of a nuisance. And we see it on the Peace River, and it's quite thick in parts of the Peace River where it's covering all the rocks. So it looks almost like an algae. It actually, I think, starts to grow a little algae on it, so it might even look a little green. It's pretty much white, but if you touch it, it's more like, it's not slimy like an algae. It's spongy, and you don't slip on it so much. And if you see it, it washes off the rocks, so it's starting to grow thicker and thicker, and it makes it hard for anything else to live on those rocks, like the bugs that fish are eating. But if it comes off the rocks, which it often does as it gets longer, it'll come off the rocks with the flow, and it'll look like dried toilet paper. Literally exactly like dried toilet paper on sticks. And so you'll think that people are just throwing a lot of toilet paper on the ground, but they're not. It's actually the Didymo. It doesn't like really high flows, so we haven't really seen it as much on the Pend'Oreille River. And it's not really, it doesn't live in lakes so much as rivers. So,
and other than being a nuisance and not very sightly, how is it harming the water?
Well, like she just said, it covers the rocks and prevents the macroinvertebrates, the bugs that the fish are eating, from living, and it drowns or it suffocates them. Essentially, it doesn't give them any habitat. It's like
bad.
Yeah,
not good.
And it's very unsightly. I mean, that's a nuisance, but it really affects recreation. And at some points, I've seen pictures from New Zealand where it's growing in a foot or two thick, so you're literally wading in a mat of this stuff, and that does not look fun.
Well, I've been there and seen it, and I can attest to the fact that we do not want Didymo like that here if we can avoid that. But how do we prevent it from getting to other rivers? Is it on our boots, on our boats, everything?
Yes, it can move around. It's very small, so you could be moving it around on anything. The way you would kill it is through drying it. It's like any good practice you want to use on your boat, but also with your fishing gear, it's good to let anything dry out in the sun. That is the ultimate way to kill these critters and keep them from moving around. It may already be on our system behaving. So it may be out there and we don't know it, but it's still a good practice to dry all of your gear and make sure that you're not moving anything around, because there are things out there that we don't even know about, and that's, we don't want to see those things come into our system either. So it's good practice.
So for years we've been hearing about Eurasian milfoil. What's the state of the milfoil today?
Well, as I said before, on Priest Lake, milfoil is still an eradication program. So the state of Idaho works to try to get rid of it completely every summer through diver dredging, having divers pull it out. If they have a thick infestation, they'll treat it chemically. But then on Pondere, it's thick. You notice it out there. And it also has done something which nature does very well and these invasive species are great at, which is hybridized with some of the native, more strong milfoils. And so this hybrid is not as effectively treated or hardly treated at all. So there's testing now to look at new treatment methods for milfoil as it becomes a more aggressive plant. For the time being, it's attempted to be managed through just keeping boat launches free of it and high recreation areas free of it.
Well, folks, I think it's time for a song break. We'll move on to one by James Taylor. James Taylor with "The Water Is Wide." And good morning, everyone. You're listening to the KRFY Morning Show with Phil Huff and myself, Julie Calamite. This morning, we're talking with Aaron Mader from the Lakes Commission and also with Molly McCann from the Lakes Commission and also Bonner County Soil and Water. Let's move on to a new topic. Phil, what do we have?
Well, we've been talking about a lot of somewhat depressing things at the time, all these invaders and problems and challenges. And there's a lot of positive stuff going on, too, and a lot of positive developments in the work to combat those, as well as provide broader education and programs. So let's start there and talk some about what the Lakes Commission's doing right now with education this month. There's a couple upcoming events.
Mm-hmm. Yes, the Lakes Commission, I try to reach out to things that aren't being done a little bit. And part of that is being taken care of in the community. But then part of it we're also trying to add to. So one of the programs that has been going on locally for 21 years now is the Water Festival, and we help out with the Water Festival. We're on the steering committee for that event and teach at the event. And the Water Festival, Molly, why don't you talk about it for a minute and I can come back to the other one.
Okay. The Water Festival is put on by Bonner Soil and Water Conservation District, and it's its 21st year. It's an outdoor field trip for fifth graders in Bonner County. And that's all fifth graders. We used to just be the school district, but now we have homeschoolers, private schools. It's essentially become a curriculum for our school district for the fifth graders every year. And it's it's a natural resource field trip, essentially. We talk about fisheries, the watershed, the history, with trapping and
human history,
macroinvertebrates, water quality. We have added an orienteering station, so we're teaching children how to use a compass and map and think about what the explorers had to do in relation to water before technology.
Don't they just want to have GPS, those kids?
Yes, they do, but they can't. Anyway, it's just a wonderful field trip. It's 2 days. We generally have 400 children turn out. That's coming up on May 19th, I believe, May 19th and 20th.
And so what are the schools you're partnering with?
The Lake Pottery School District has been attending for 20 years now.
Wow.
Yeah. And then Waldorf attends, all the homeschoolers. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think of the other. Hardin, Priest River, mm-hmm. all their homeschooling and their private schools and their public schools.
Priest Lake
now. It's the entire county.
It sounds like quite the undertaking.
And where does it take place?
Riley Creek Campground. It's really fun. Lots of great trails and water.
And to lead up to the Water Festival, we also started organizing field trips about 5 years ago, I think, to the Water Life Discovery Center. And this is a fishing game property that was a fish hatchery. And they still stock some fish there before they move into a water body, but it's not a truly operational fish hatchery. So it kind of went back to the public and it's public lands. And there's a little nature center there. And we lead field trips out of the Waterlife Discovery Center in the springtime through the month of May. We do 6 field trips and organize volunteers to help out with those trips. And they're geared towards second and third grade to tier them up to the Water Festival. So it's going to give some baseline knowledge that then they can reattach to in fifth grade so that some of this gets incorporated into just their general thinking. And these field trips, we can't fit all the schools with the setup we have right now. So I take the 6 schools, or sometimes we can fit in another extra one that first get to me to sign up for the field trips. And they do similar things. They look at bugs in the water. They explore some wetlands. They go on a little hike. They learn about water quality, doing some chemical testing of the water. And they can do fish prints, like an artistic printing of fish. And there's one more.
Bull trout education.
Oh, and fisheries education, which Fishing Game comes out and teaches that for us. And they also, one of the hatchery managers will come and pull the fish out of the hatchery and stock it into their trucks to go up to lakes, which is pretty neat for all the kids to see.
And the Waterlife Discovery Center is a wonderful resource even when there aren't field trips. And where's that located?
It's about a mile and a half down Lakeshore Drive, on your right if you're driving from the Long Bridge. And it is open to the public, so anybody can go walk around there. The building is not always open. It's run by a fishing game volunteer group called the Master Naturalists now. And I know, I'm not sure of the times, but they do have hours that during the summertime that it's open that you can go explore the inside. And they've done great things in there. There's also a fish viewing pond with windows so you can look at they have rainbow trout in the pond and you can see them.
So let's just take a moment and recap, because I think there's a couple of events we might not have touched on or just glossed over, but coming up real soon is a public meeting to talk about the flowering rush.
Yes, there's the Bonner County Weed Supervisor, Brad Bloomer, is putting together a meeting about flowering rush at the Bonner County Admin Building, which is on Highway 2 and Division. And that meeting will be at 6 p.m. on the 11th of April. And it should cover different tools for fighting with flowering rush, basically, for landowners and for just the interested public. It's just an open public meeting to learn about flowering rush more in depth.
And that's not necessary to come to the flowering rush pool, although it would help round someone's education out about it. But the flowering rush pool is following that shortly?
Yeah, the flowering rush dig will be on the 16th of April at 10 a.m. at the City Beach Pavilion. And I really, even if you think it's covered to pull at City Beach, it's still worth going because you can learn what the plant looks like at this time of year and how to identify it so that if you need to dig it up on your own property, you're able to find it. And it's a great tool just for your own toolbox.
And then the Army Corps of Engineers is having a public meeting to talk about the lake level.
Yes, at 2 times a year, the Army Corps from Albany Falls Dam has a public meeting to tell people about what they project the lake levels will be and review a little bit of the last year. That meeting is on the 21st of April. And this meeting is at the Priest River Event Center. It's a really beautiful building, pretty new. And they host it in Priest River in the springtime. They host it in Sandpoint in the fall. So this is the Priest River meeting, and everybody's welcome to come.
And then the Waterlife Discovery Festival, or the Waterlife Festival, rather.
The water life discovery field trips we do Thursdays and Fridays through the month of May and a little bit into June. And the water festival is the 19th.
I believe it's the 19th and 20th. But it really is an event for the public. Right. It's a school event.
But you have a busy, busy spring coming up.
Absolutely, like. Yeah. We have the Idaho Forestry Contest mm-hmm. coming up. Both stations are opening.
Right.
Yeah, spring is crazy.
So for listeners who may just be tuning in and want to find out more about the Lakes Commission, you also have a website for more resources and quarterly meetings to look at some of these issues?
Yes. The Lakes Commission has quarterly meetings that is mandated by law, and I try to fill the agenda with lots of interesting topics about surface waters, and the dates change throughout the year, so there's not a set schedule. But there's one in the spring, in the summer, in the fall, in the winter. And you can always learn about what meeting is coming up next in the agenda by going to our website, which is www.lakes-commission.com. And if you have a question, please email me at lakescommission@gmail.com. Mm-hmm. And I can add you. I send out notifications sometimes about different events or changes in the lake levels, and I have a public list I send those notifications out to, so I can add you to that.
Yeah. And those meetings are a great opportunity for the public to come, and usually there's time for questions and answers from each of the speakers on various topics.
Yes, there's should be time for that, and it's a great way. I started going to these meetings before I started working for the Lakes Commission, and it was really interesting for me to hear about all the different things going on our waterways. And
so tell us about some of the other educational efforts you have. You mentioned a few things during the break.
Yeah, we've recently started looking into how to reduce mercury into our system, which is extremely toxic. And that began because the city of Sandpoint applied for a new wastewater treatment permit with the EPA. And in that permit, there will likely be, that has yet to be approved, but there will likely be a mercury minimization plan required by the city of Sandpoint. Essentially, exactly what that is, you know, is minimizing the amount of mercury going into our system. And that permit that I'm talking about is allowing the city to discharge their treated wastewater into the Pend Oreille River. So it's kind of a big project to tackle, so we're just taking little baby steps to that. And one of those is expanding our CFL recycling program in Sandpoint, compact fluorescent light bulb, because compact fluorescent light bulbs contain mercury. And currently the only place you can recycle those is at the Home Depot. But we are expanding that to all of the transfer stations in Bonner County. So every transfer station, there's around 13 of those. And the city of Sandpoint, hopefully. I'm currently talking to the mayor about that. Avista has a program where they supply a box for that. Anywho, and then, so that's the latest with that, and I'll be advertising for that. And then Aaron is also working on some in-school mercury education.
So another way to try and reduce mercury input into our system is to go through anything that could contain mercury in a place and try to replace those tools, like a thermometer, or there's types of light switches and different things that have mercury that you wouldn't think, with things that don't contain mercury. So once your light bulb burns out, replace it with a
LED
or something of that nature. And they're called mercury audits. And so I started going into, and I'd like to hit all the schools, trying to do a mercury audit, because schools tend to harbor more mercury than other places because they've used it in science labs. And they also, some schools are pretty old. The buildings are old and they contain antiquated equipment that contains mercury. And so you can just get through. Often they don't even know that it's there. And almost every year there's some sort of mercury spill in a school. It just in the state of Idaho. You can look through the records. It's pretty amazing. And so we're trying to go through an audit with the schools, and then we teach a lesson so that people are better understand the threats of mercury. And someday I'd like to get into the hospital and do an audit there as well, because that's another big mercury-containing building.
Well, a question from me is there a who would one call if you have a mercury spill? You wouldn't call you all, would you? Are you the group? No.
If you had a significant mercury spill, more than a thermometer or a light bulb, you would call. I mean, you could call 911, honestly, because you just want to vacate the building. Mercury starts to evaporate immediately. You might not see it because it's, but there are, reading these reports that we went through, all these different articles, people can get sick. I mean, depending on the weather, from how much mercury is evaporating from just a thermometer breaking, from very little amount of mercury. So it is potentially extremely hazardous, and it's very bad for babies and for pregnant women to be exposed to. It's huge harm. The harms are huge on a newborn. And yeah.
Well, good. Good that you're thinking about that. Would you mind if I move on to another topic that you all cover? And that's the funding for a study of the dam outlet at Priest Lake. It sounds like there's been some money granted for a study there.
Yes, the last summer on Priest Lake, a lot of issues arose because we had very low water levels. Right? There was the water ran off before anybody even knew it. And there just wasn't a lot of precip. The evaporation rates were really high. It was hot. And it exposed all these things that needed attention at Priest Lake, as we had to drop river flows very low to keep the lake level at Priest Lake up to its summer pool. And so the legislature looked at this topic, and they granted about $300,000 to study a few different things. So one is just the outlet dam. Outlet dam controls Priest Lake, and it's a very old dam. It's not modernized virtually in any ways. And so they want to look at the dam itself and see what improvements it needs or if it needs structural work. And then they're also going to look at the idea of raising the pool, the storage of Priest Lake, a little bit when there's a drought year forecasted. To see if they could hold back more water to keep the flows into the river more stable and retain that summer lake level. And then that is just a study. So that'll study to look at how that impacts landowners around the lake and what that might do to the way my sediment moves through the system. Who knows? Just that's what they're looking at with that one. And then there's also a portion of that study is to look at the rebuilding or redesign or something for the thoroughfare breakwater, because the thoroughfare is filling in with sediment and making it hard for motorized boats to get up to the upper lake. Mm. And so they will also be looking at how to revamp that breakwater, which is failing.
And as I know, being a trout fisher, fishing person, there's been discussion of changing the dam so that it might, its outflow might come from the bottom of the lake rather than the top. But that's not part of the study this time around, or a little bit.
That is not part of the study. This is that's a concept that has been put out there, and there's a lot still to be looked at for that to be taken on. But that idea is out there to cool off the river flows so that we could potentially have a cold water fishery on Priest River. But right now, that is not part of this study effort.
Understood.
Well, we've been talking about a lot of different water quantity, water quality issues, some of the threats, opportunities for education. Who knew there was so much driving across the Long Bridge, just looking out at this beautiful lake? Who knew there was so much going on just beneath the surface and on the edges? I'm curious, when you drive across the Long Bridge, what do you see or think about?
It's funny because I think I run across it a lot. And I think I should think more about it, but I still just think it's beautiful. I mean, it is an incredible water body, and it is extremely healthy, even with these aspects we're trying to protect. We want to keep it there, but it's just incredible. I got chills just thinking about it, honestly.
It's a powerful thing. Our connection to water in general, and our connection here locally especially, it's a spiritual center of Bonner County, and certainly one of the economic drivers of the area, and frankly, the reason that a lot of us are here. And we appreciate the work that you and others are doing to protect it. Any last thoughts for folks about how they can become more engaged?
I guess that the biggest engagement is to recognize that these waters are They're amazing. They have potential to be at risk, and that we need to make sure that we're taking care of them and doing our part in preserving what I live here for, what I think a lot of people live here for. And I just be thankful for what it is. It's amazing.
So one last time, the Flowering Rush Pool, April 16th.
April 16th.
10 a.m. at City Beach.
Yeah. Oh, I have one more thing. Can I? So, and the other thing you can do is keep your eyes open. If you notice something weird on the water, you notice something discolor that you didn't notice before, or a plant you've never seen, report it. You can email it to me. I know how to connect. Email it to Molly. Just get it out there, because that's how we find out about things. We can't be everywhere at once.
And what's the best email address for someone to use?
Lakescommission@gmail.com. Or, yeah. Yep.
So if we see Flowering Rush, do you want that reported, or should we just go try and pull it out ourselves, or both?
I think you should try to learn how to...
pull it out if you've had some training on how to pull it out.
We don't want to spread it, do we?
Correct.
We don't
want to snap very easily.
All right.
So come to the event, learn how to do it, and then you can pull it out on your own.
That sounds like a plan. I think I better get there. Well, I think it's time to wrap it up with our guests. I appreciate you both being here, Molly and Aaron. Thanks for taking the time to be with us on the KRFY Morning Show, listener-supported community radio of North Idaho. We'll move on to a song break, and then Phil and I will talk about some upcoming events. And thank you all again. All right, and we're back on the Tuesday Morning Show. This is 88.5 KRFY Pondere, your listener-supported community radio for North Idaho. We're on with our hosts, Phil Huff. Hello, Phil.
Hi, Julie.
And myself, Julie Calamine. We've just finished interviewing Emily Mader and Molly McCann, both from the Lakes Commission. They were wonderful interviews. Let's move on to some current events. Phil, would you like to fill us in?
Sure. We've got a lot of stuff coming up this week, as usual in Sandpoint. But tonight is Magic Night at Jalapeno's Restaurant. 6 to 8 p.m. every Wednesday, resident magician Star Alexander. But probably the big thing, just jumping ahead to the weekend, is the Home and Garden Show. The Panhandle Building Contractors Association will be at the fairgrounds Saturday from 9 a.m. and 9 a.m. until 5:30 p.m. Saturday and 10 to 4 on Sunday, with over 40 vendors of booths with creative ideas and products for your home and yard projects. Activities for the entire family. For admission is free.
Sounds good. Might mention a couple of things coming up on our show in the future. Tomorrow we have the Wednesday edition of the Morning Show, and you will be able to join Chris Bessler and Susie Prez. Their guest is going to be Paul Couchet, Executive Director of the Bonner County Economic Development Corporation. And then Thursday, tune into the Morning Show with host Jack Peterson. Upcoming guest to be determined. A good one, I'm sure. Oh, just a reminder that if you didn't hear all of our show today, you'll be able to hear it on a podcast. It will be posted within a few days up to our website, and you'll be able to listen to any parts of it that you missed today, or tell your friends about it, even better. Remember, we're listening to KRFY Community Radio, and you can find the podcast at krfy.org. And let's keep in mind our wonderful benefit coming up. It's going to be the Little Smokies live at the Panada Theater. That's going to be Friday, May 6th. Doors open at 6:30 for a 7:30 show. Hope you and your friends will attend. You can find tickets here at the Evans Brothers Coffee, at Pedro's, at iCarts, or online at panada.org. Well, let's move out with a song from the Little Smokies, and I'd like to thank everyone for joining us today on the Morning Show. It was good having you, Phil. Yeah,
thank you, Julie.
All right, we'll see you next week.